The Glenda Ritz lawsuit against the State Board of Education. Why did it come to this? John Gregg drops his 2016 bid for governor. Carl Brizzi avoids federal charges. And both Indiana senators complain about Obamacare. That, plus the Peyton Manning tribute and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 25, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, Attorney General Greg Zeller filed a motion asking a judge to strike the lawsuit filed against the State Board of Education by State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz. Ritz vowed to keep on fighting. Glenda Ritz emerged from her office to make her first public comments on the matter. She believes members of the State Board of Education acted illegally by asking the Legislative Services Agency to release A to F grading information for schools. The governor also got involved. You'll hear from him after Ritz describes a meeting with the Attorney General.
I'm not going to get into the specifics that we talked about, but I am aware that he did file a motion to strike today and has asked for a hearing. This afternoon, we will file our objection to the strike, and we look forward to that hearing. The department believes that this case is important, and we will continue.
My ambition is to take politics out of our schools, take politics out of education.
Is it your feeling that Glenda Ritz is trying to bring politics into it?
I wouldn't want to judge her motivations or anyone's motivations. Look, misunderstandings happen.
Why did Glenda Ritz run to court? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. Leslie Weidenbender, editor for the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, what's the motivation for that lawsuit?
Politics, clearly. She is being advised by a group of people she surrounded herself with that I think come out of a strong political environment, and she being a political novice is taking some pretty bad information from a lot of people that she surrounded herself with. And clearly the Attorney General of the State of Indiana is the lawyer for state government, and there's no way that this is going to fly, that the Department of Education attorneys could have any standing on doing this.
The governor says that he was in a meeting with Glenda Ritz for 90 minutes the day before this lawsuit was filed. She made no mention.
Oh, kind of like what he did to her the last time when he went ahead with his coup to take over the Education Policy Initiative and never mentioned it to her. Look, the fact of the matter is she's absolutely right on this lawsuit, okay? And the Attorney General cannot represent her. He has an inherent conflict because he represents the individuals on the Board of Education in their official capacity. You know, he can't be on both sides of the issue,
and she
can't even consult with him about that.
But her allegation is that there was a secret meeting, that they broke the open door law. One of the things the Attorney General says is that the proper venue for her is the state public access counselor.
It is.
What she's asking for here is an injunction to make certain that they don't rush to judgment on this, like exactly like the John Grew and Bill Sheldrake recommendation on the report was. Don't rush this process. Get it right. They have 55,000 parental appeals of the ISTEP scoring, all of which have to be done individually and then scored. And they want to rush without that being done to get the wrong results again after they've screwed it up the first time.
Is this about A to F grading, or is this about who gets to call the shots?
I would say that the majority about it is about who gets to call the shots. I mean, A to F is the issue du jour. There'll be other issues as we go forward. But clearly there is a struggle between the administration and Glenda Ritz over who's going to control education policy. And that's exactly what we're seeing right here, right now.
There is a larger issue here that I think the public and journalists should want to know about. And that is it okay for a board to, the majority of a board, to take action that is official action in some way other than in a public meeting?
Right.
I'm not clear on whether state law is written in a way that makes what they did actually illegal or not. But if something like
this... What they did was they distributed an email asking everybody to sign off on a letter. And should be pointed out, Glenda Ritz is chairman of the State Board of Education, and the email didn't go to her.
And
the letter called for a memorandum of understanding between LSA and the Department of Education.
But regardless, whatever...
It does matter because that's involving the Department of Education.
Let's let Leslie finish.
Regardless, it's important. It would be an important precedent if boards and commissions of all kinds, whether they be city councils or school boards, would be allowed to conduct business by simply sending around an email.
Right. All right. A spokeswoman for the State Board of Education says there is video evidence that Glenda Ritz actually took part in the decision that prompted the lawsuit. It's archived on the state website. During the October 2nd meeting of the State Board of Education, a board member suggested that the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency, or LSA, draw up A to F school grades as a check on grades issued by the Department of Education. Ritz was enthusiastic.
Actually, the department is more than excited about doing a check. That just makes sure that what we are going to release is correct.
It was simply staff responding to requests and follow-up from the meeting about engaging LSA in the process.
But it's the same information, right?
It's talking about a sequence done completely differently.
That's Ritz spokesperson Daniel Altman, preceded by Lou Ann Baker, who speaks for the State Board of Education. Did Glenda Ritz forget about that portion of the meeting?
No, because that portion of the meeting did not take official action. Her issue on this is just what I said. They have 55,000 appeals to go through first, and these yahoos, having messed it up the first time, want to do it again.
Well, apparently her issue is not that the information be released. She wants it released after the Department of Education releases its information and not before, right?
Because you've got to score all of those appeals first in order to get the information correct. And by the way, discussing it favorably and taking official action, which is what that letter to the legislative services through the two leaders implies, it's official action. That wasn't taken, and Leslie's point on this is exactly right. They're trying to do an end run around the open door policy.
I think more accurately, a shortcut maybe. Were they trying to take a shortcut?
The Legislative Services Agency has already run these numbers. They've already created the model that does this because they did it for the Shudrick study, okay? And so it's a matter of plugging in numbers. 90% of those numbers already exist. You got school systems and schools out there throwing a fit because they don't have this information to base the decisions they need to make on it. And that's why this is being done the way it's being done. And she sat there and said, yes, we welcome the fact that the LSA ought to be involved in this process. Now, either she forgot that that's what she said, or she's just not smart enough to understand it. Because, seriously.
What they talked about in that meeting was having a check on what the Department of Education does.
But they also talked about doing this
right
because it was taking so long to get numbers from the Department of Education.
But they used the word check, and that's a completely different situation than we have now. And I also think that it's really important to think about all the implications that go with this. So as schools have the chance to appeal. So if the FLSA runs the numbers, who does the official numbers then? Are they the LSA numbers? Are they the DOE numbers? We've gotten so involved in the politics of all this that we're forgetting about the nuts and bolts of how this actually does impact schools and how it would work whichever direction you go.
But I think it's the politics that are the overriding factor.
Is for the people in the state house, but it's not for the people who are actually
back in school districts waiting for information. Tell me this. You've got Glenda Ritz is the only statewide elected Democrat. The governor is a Republican. The majority on the board are Republican. You got Republican supermajorities in the legislature. Is Glenda Ritz going to be able to work with people to accomplish anything going forward?
Well, at this point, it's going to be very difficult. I think, at the very beginning, had a different set of circumstances occurred, maybe. But, it's hard to imagine a scenario where you're able to just say, oh, time out, let's do this over again, because it has gotten incredibly acrimonious. It has gotten politically very high stakes. And, you point out, Glenda Ritz is the only Democrat in the state house, so she probably does feel a little like it's piling on. But the reality is this is a high-stakes game, and they do need to get this sorted out.
But the important part is she was also the only statewide elected official elected to set education policy. And the problem with this is that the Republicans are so upset about that selection that they have tried to usurp her power from as soon as she was elected.
Education was a big part of the governor's race.
Yeah, but that's what the superintendent does exclusively.
What's intriguing about this to me is that the 10 members that are appointed to this body are not political people. These are education people. No, they really are. And one of the people And one of the people calling for this is a Democrat appointee to this who was on camera saying that we need this information.
Gordon Hendry.
We need it now. He signed the letter.
Who was recently appointed by Mike Pence.
Right, and he's a Democrat member of the board.
Yeah, he's appointed by Mike Pence.
So he's a Democrat member.
He's appointed by Mike Pence.
I think we'll have more on this next week. Moving on. John Gregg has ruled out a run for governor in 2016. Gregg was the Democratic candidate in 2012 and lost to Mike Pence by less than 3% of the vote. He's laid the groundwork for a new campaign ever since, but cited family reasons for giving up his bid. He explained his decision in a letter posted on his Facebook page. John Katzenberger, on a scale of 1 to 10, how big a surprise is that?
Well, I think it's a bit of a surprise. I'd say it's more than 5, probably 6 or 7, because he has been in a stance all along of saying, laying the groundwork so he could do the campaign in 2016. He ran at the end especially a very good campaign, had a nice opportunity, and it was very close. So, I think that my assumption was he was going to go forward with this, and since he's bowed out, I was a little bit surprised.
I guess it was unusual for him to be as active as he was this early in the cycle, and then maybe more unusual that he's getting out this early.
I think it was especially interesting that he made an announcement about it instead of just kind of fading back out, because it is so incredibly early. I mean, it's so early, it's even hard to talk about who might replace him as a possible candidate, because we're talking about 2016 here. So you're right. It was very surprising that he kept campaigning, but I think he felt like he had some momentum at the end of that campaign, and that in order to win again or to try again, he would have to keep that up. Clearly, he's decided that it's not worth it for whatever reason.
Larry Conrad was a repeat nominee back in the 70s, but it's unusual.
It is, because it is a grind. It is hard to go out there and campaign statewide and do this. And if John says he didn't have the fire to go do this, I believe him that he's doing it because of family and because he wants to work on his law practice. I think Leslie had it right. I think he had some momentum at the end of the campaign, and I think he was caught up in the fact that it was a close race, and he was being encouraged by a lot of folks in his party to say, hey, if it came this close, maybe you ought to continue to look at this kind of thing. But if you don't really have it in you to want to go do this every day, you shouldn't do it, because you won't be a very good candidate in that circumstance.
It's a big state. It's a tall order.
It's a very tall order.
Where do Democrats look for a candidate now?
There are half a dozen names out there of people who are looking at this. John, obviously, people were deferring to John, at least initially, because of the kind of campaign he ran last time. And so there'll be some movement and all, and people will shake out. But as Leslie points out, it's a long way between here and 2016. Politically, that's probably three lifetimes.
But at the moment, the two names come up in most conversations, Evan Bayh and Barron Hill. Anybody else at the top of the list?
There are other names out there. People are looking at it, yes.
Yeah. You want to mention a couple?
No.
Don't forget Jill Long Thompson.
No. But there are other names out there being mentioned already, and we'll see how it shakes out. It's a long way.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, who will be the Democratic candidate for governor in 2016? Your choices are A, Barron Hill, B, Evan Bayh, or C, someone else. Last week's question was, do you support virtual gambling at the airport? 24% said yes, 60% said no.
16% said, why not have internet gambling everywhere? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org and look for the poll. Former Marion County Prosecutor Carl Brizzi will not face federal bribery charges. That's the announcement this week from U.S. Attorney Joe Hogsett. There was an investigation that involved two cases where Brizzi received tens of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from individuals who were seeking help from the prosecutor's office. Brizzi's attorney, Ron Safer, says the announcement didn't come soon enough.
Carl is relieved, ecstatic. You know, this is where he should have been years ago, and he is glad to have his life restored.
Leslie Weidenbrenner, was Carl Brizzi treated fairly?
That's a tough one. This investigation lasted a long time. I think that it's to his benefit that the U.S. attorney was willing to come out and actually say we're not going to indict, because sometimes they just don't, and it just the cloud hangs over forever. Having said that, though, this wasn't exactly, they didn't exactly clear him in a way that he was probably that happy about. They basically said they couldn't prove beyond a reasonable doubt. They didn't say we didn't find anything.
Well, and he also suggested that he should have his law license.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he said that they were going to refer this to the disciplinary commission, or to the authorities who could take it to the disciplinary commission. Yeah, they did announce that they weren't going to bring any further charges, but they gave it to him upside the head when they did. So, you know, it's an interesting scenario for him.
But I think it's policy for the Department of Justice, if any lawyer is involved in a criminal investigation, to refer whatever they find to whatever disciplinary commission in whatever state that attorney has a license. So I don't think that's that anything out of the
It wasn't the recommendation, Ann. It wasn't the recommendation that I was referring to as giving it upside the head. It was the way it was presented.
Well,
it was pretty clear that they thought that but for a little bit more,
charges. Yeah, they thought there was something there, it seemed like. Yeah. They just didn't. He said they couldn't prove it.
Right.
You've had two guilty pleas in the same set of fact circumstances, so that's not so surprising that there would be that feeling.
But if you're Joe Hogsett and you go after somebody as high profile as Carl Brizzi, you better make sure you get the job done, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the question, you know. There are those who are kind of raising their eyebrows about the way Joe Hogsett went about doing this and questioned whether it was ethically the right thing to do it the way he did it. Basically he was saying, you know, I think you're guilty, but I can't prove it. That's the way that came off. And that's a kind of a tough way for to be announced that we're going to drop this situation and then say you're going to go after his legal or his law license. A lot of people were raising their eyebrows over this one, and I'm kind of interested in the way he handled this. You know,
I do think, though, in the end, it is still better than that they make the announcement.
That's right.
Yeah, but
you can
go
on
a news release saying that.
Yeah, but most
we
of the
don't
time,
have the
truth.
Goods and that
most
thing.
Of the time, they never confirm that there's an ongoing investigation, nor do they confirm that they're not bringing charges. So he, you know, the idea that he's upset about the fact that he announced that he's not bringing charges is kind of ironic. And you know, what happened, I think, here, if you look at what happened in the Bales case, is that when you rely on the testimony of co-conspirators in this, the jury may not find it persuasive. They didn't in the Bales case. So why do it again?
John Bales, who was in a real estate deal with Carl Brizzi, who was tried on federal charges and acquitted.
With the testimony of someone else who pled guilty, obviously the jury wasn't persuaded by it, and that's why it doesn't go any further. There's no point in wasting taxpayer money on it.
Dan Coats has filed a bill to delay the implementation of Obamacare for a year. Coats said this week that the website problems are just one reason why. He also thinks it's unfair for individuals to face fines for failing to get health insurance when fines on employers have been delayed. The Republican senator thinks it's important to have the 2014 elections first.
Because it's not working. It's not ready for prime time, and the American people are finding out what it is, and I think they need another shot at the polls in terms of whether they want to go forward or not go forward.
I talked to the White House Chief of Staff yesterday and said, why didn't you use some of the folks who ran this most advanced tech system for the campaign, put them over in the healthcare end? Because we clearly did not prepare for situations where a lot of people came online at one time or the whole system. And so they need to get this fixed. They need to get it fixed right now.
And that's Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly. And Delaney, Obamacare is getting tough to defend, the rollout.
Well, I don't think that Obamacare is being tough to defend. The rollout certainly is tough to defend, and I think that they had anticipated that states like Kentucky, who are now enrolling 1,000 people a day, more states would participate. But even saying that, you can't defend this, and I think some heads ought to roll for the fact that the system didn't work, but that doesn't mean that the program isn't good. And, you know, when you get that kind of an outpouring in states that make an attempt to educate the people about what's available and to sign them up, unlike here, I mean, Dan Coats did everything he could to defund it, to kill it, to repeal it, and now he's saying, no, people can't get on it.
But he's also finding that there are Democrats in the Senate willing to support this bill.
I think we'll see. Yes. Certainly in the area here between 27% and 100%, where they're not going to get any subsidies in Indiana, and we're not going to have any subsidies for anybody getting health care because of the lawsuit Greg Zeller brought, if he wins. You get all those situations here, and it's a concern, but the Obama administration has already said they're not going to impose fines in those circumstances. So I don't know what it's another excuse on his part to try to kill Obamacare.
Well, the interesting part of what Coach is saying is that we should have another election first. I mean, we've had a couple of elections. Look,
six Democrat United States senators in the last 10 days have come out in favor of delaying for individuals and for families, just what Dan Coats is calling for. In the last 10 days, six United States Senator Democrats. All of them are in districts that would be considered swing districts,
right.
Which all of a sudden they
are
deciding that this is, they're also deciding that this is a problem for them in the next
right.
election.
Yeah,
They voted to defund it in the first place.
So what?
Landry, all of, so what?
You got six out of ours.
And you're losing people right and left because they know it's a problem. This is a $400 million website. That's a disaster.
And they say
if they can't
have it
run this, how are they
going to
run health care?
They'll have it operating in time for everybody to sign up.
Joe Donnelly is still a supporter of Obamacare, mm-hmm. but I thought his comments were interesting. He's clearly trying to find some middle ground here.
Well, I mean, as Ann said, it's pretty hard to defend the website. So I think it's not a surprise you're going to see Democrats. You are going to see other Democrats, including senators, calling for people to get fired. Calling for someone to take responsibility for this. You know, it's interesting, almost any time there is a big rollout that involves any kind of new computer system or integrated system, it's always a mess. I mean, we can look at our own experiences in Indiana with the Medicaid
IBM
rollout. With
the FSSA.
Exactly, and we even remember the license branch.
Right,
the license
exactly.
change rollout was a mess. There's always a period where things aren't working. The real question is going to be, how long does it take to get fixed?
Right.
And then you do have to start thinking about whether or not there are delays or those kinds of things.
But unfortunately, the political damage is being done right now for the Democrats, and that's the reality that they have to face. They caught a bit of a break because of the government shutdown, and it was quiet about this. But then the storm has now struck. It is kind of interesting. It feels like we've kind of gone down the rabbit hole a little bit in the sense that all of the Republicans who didn't like the program to begin with are now saying, well, it's not good enough. I just find that a little bit interesting.
But this also proves what a bad strategy the government shutdown was, because this would
would have been the focus.
This would have been the focus.
No question.
Well, that's what happens when the Tea Party controls the Republican Party.
Right.
Finally, Peyton Manning says the tribute he received before this week's Colts game is something he will never forget. The Denver Broncos quarterback was the subject of a big screen video presentation that lasted 90 seconds, and then fans gave him a standing ovation just as long. The former Colts quarterback waved, held his hand over his heart, and said thank you.
I truly appreciated it, and it was a great reception from the fans, and I truly appreciated that as well. Something I'll always remember. I was very, very grateful for it. Pretty special minute and a half there that something I'll always remember.
Mike McDaniel, was that touching?
Absolutely. It was a great evening, a wonderful tribute to him. Fans of Indianapolis love Peyton Manning, and immediately as soon as the ceremony was over, got behind the Colts and cheered their brains out, and we got the outcome we were looking for.
I was there. I thought it was very interesting because that was an emotional moment for a lot of people. A lot of people were in their seats early just to watch the guy warm up.
Right.
But they did. I've not heard a Colts crowd cheer like that from beginning to end.
and they weren't cheering for him.
That's okay. I mean, it's a competition, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't have a special place in the hearts and minds of everybody in this town. He's meant not just football. I mean, he's done a huge amount for this town, and he's been a wonderful representative of a professional sports organization that some professional sports organizations need more of those.
And he brought an awful lot of eyeballs to the TV who got a good view of it.
Oh, they had a huge, that was one, among the highest rated ever for a Sunday night game. We've been very fortunate with our professional athletes in this town, by and large, when you think about the ones that we've got, including Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.